So hello, my name is Mika McKinnon, and I am a freelance scientist, which I swear is a real job. And how it's relevant today is that I get most of my work by being curious and excited in public about science. And as you might notice, I am a woman, which can lead to some conflicts and make me into a target for all sorts of fun things. And yet I can't just retreat and hide in a little cave, because if I do, I don't get work anymore. So I'm going to be coming from the practical perspective of how do you find some sort of balance in the risk reward of participating in public while simultaneously trying to stay alive and healthy.
And I'm Rebecca Hiles. I'm a sex educator and dating coach called the Frisky Fairy. I'm located up in Philly, and similarly, sex educator and dating coach is also a real job.
Yeah.
You would have thought.
Surprise! All sorts of real jobs.
And it also is a job that requires me to be public and to, you know, be really outspoken about what I'm thinking and what I'm saying and, like, how to be active in my community. Communities, plural. But that, of course, means that I also get a lot of feedback from people who feel that my opinions are incorrect. I can come from the practical standpoint, but moreover, I tend to come from more of the, like, emotional standpoint of, like, how to focus on self-care, how to sort of get yourself past the point when you want to just scream and throw your computer out the window because you simply cannot breathe anymore.
And alas, we used to have a lawyer on this panel, but he has been detained by other life circumstances, so we do not have the legal side of things covered, so we'll kind of touch up against them, but it's alas, that is our invisible partner here. We saved a microphone for him. Let's see, where should we start with this then? Let's get a kind of a feel for where things are at in the room. How many people have received targeted online harassment? How many people are afraid they might? How many people are kind of, you choose what sort of activities you engage in public because of a fear of harassment? Okay, so we're definitely, this is kind of good because it means that most of the people in the room are on the proactive side of there's concern, but not yet had a SWAT team show up at your door, which is great. We like being on this side because it means we can do more things in advance to keep you safe. I don't want to, like, monologue up here, so I'm trying to figure out, like, how to hand things back and forth.
I guess we can talk about, like, various ways in which we've, like, been harassed. I think that
go
might
for
be
it.
A
yep, right. Sounds good.
So I had two very distinct instances of harassment beyond the usual, like, oh man, feminist skank kind of thing, which is like a daily occurrence. The two instances I'm talking about, one of which actually had nothing to do with my public persona. It was like a personal life thing, but I think that it counts, so I'm going to bring it up. So the first one, I wrote an article about vaccinations. And how I feel about anti-vaxxers. I have some very loud opinions about that. You'd feel free to come up and talk to me about them. I really love talking about those opinions. But I got featured on an anti-vax page wherein, like, 2,000 people commented, like, individual people commented on, like, the post, and some of them came over to mine, and they were, like, blowing up my comments. And I keep a very, like, lax policy on my comments, as long as you don't threaten someone, or are, like, so incredibly ist that, like, don't call somebody the N-word. Like, please. Like, that's inappropriate. I mean, there are a lot of other inappropriate things, but once you get to that, like, level of, like, horribleness, then I'm like, maybe let's, and I'm not above editing people's comments before they go live either. But yeah, they just, like, blew up my comments, and there was one person in there who I checked, because I would keep going back to the Facebook group, because once I found out that it was coming from Facebook, I plugged my post into the search bar, and it popped up in the group. And I was like, oh, look at that. I can see this now. And so I went back through, and I, like, one person went through, and she found my, and this was when I was only operating as the Frisky Fairy. I didn't have it attached to my personal account. But she found my personal Facebook account. She found my work Facebook account. She found my phone number, my email address. Now, granted, my phone number was my Google Voice number, so that's not like a big deal because I leave that public. She found like all of these different sites that I have accounts on, including ones that I don't have like associated with my work. And I was sitting there and I'm like, wow. Eventually I went back through and I like posted a comment to like a reply to somebody's comment that was like, and you know, please feel free to tell so-and-so on the Facebook page that while I really appreciate her doing all this research on me, that it would be really polite if she stopped trying to find me in person. That would be great. Thanks. And then they eventually blocked me from the page because...
Of course. So there's a couple of things in there that are actually really common elements of a storyline of this. So one of the things you did about maintaining situational awareness by watching once information is leaked, keeping an eye on what it is and what's happening, that's a really good way of being able to cut off threats before they happen. So this is kind of a reactionary instead of a proactive thing. It's if it's already too late and you're already a target, finding out what people are saying, how they're coordinating and what they're planning is a really, really good way of being able to understand, are they making 500 pizza deliveries to your address? Are they, how much information have they found, and is it right? People have doxed me repeatedly with information for addresses in states I've never lived in. So sometimes it's completely inaccurate. It's good fun then.
I really feel bad for the people.
Oh, yeah. Well, as far as I could tell, it was a fictional address.
Oh, good.
Like, go ahead.
Because that would really,
there.
Really suck if somebody was like...
Oh, yeah.
Having pizza... If, like some 80-year-old grandmother that was like, I didn't order any pizza.
Exactly.
It's like 2 a.m.
Oh, it's horrible for everybody involved. And you also had a Google phone number, which is a really, really handy thing. So one of the problems with having your personal information released is that it's, where does it come from in the first place? Sometimes it can be lax privacy settings. And that grows increasingly common as privacy settings get more and more complicated. But assuming the basic standard of you've gone through, you've locked down your privacy on accounts, you understand how your settings work, well, then that information is coming from government records that are accessible through Freedom of Information Act, or even sometimes just available because governments have not yet caught up with the concept of privacy very well. Or it's people you willingly gave information to who are now abusing it. And this is something really common. My academic background is in physics, astronomy, and geophysics. So I'm very tied into the astronomy community where we're having some very high profile instances of sexual harassment in astronomy recently. Well, that does verge onto the online aspect of there is one person we've identified who likes to get the phone numbers of women grad students and then just batch call them for months and months and months and months. So Google phone numbers that you can disable and switch to a new phone number or use when you don't really necessarily trust who you're talking to, just have effectively a set of disposable phone numbers is a really nice precautionary tool. Also useful in, say, dating when you're not quite sure if you like this person that much yet. Or if you're meeting people at a convention, or you're meeting up for one night in town, or whatever it is that you're doing where you don't really know somebody all that well, having temporary phone numbers is really useful.
The Google Voice phone number is also really handy for my next portion of harassment, in that it allows you to block people's phone numbers. So I've got my Google Voice number years ago, right? Like when it was first a thing, and I was like, that sounds fantastic, I'm going to do that now. And so I got it, and I like have been using it for a long time. And my ex-husband, he didn't have my device number because we always just use Google Voice, right? I had his device number because he called out from it, but I always just texted because I have the memory of a goldfish, and I like to make sure everything I say is in text so that I don't forget that I said it. But when we started our divorce process, it became like a big chaotic thing. They made me homeless. My ex-husband and his girlfriend made me homeless. I left and took half of what was in the joint bank account, as is my legal right in the state of Virginia. and his girlfriend. Prior to all of this, I had blocked her on Twitter. I had blocked him on Twitter. Like, I wanted to have a safe space, right? Like a safe space on the internet. Hilarious, right? I wanted a place that was safe on the internet that was mine. And so, like, a thing happened, and they kicked me out, and she created fake accounts on Twitter to attack me on my business account. She wrote long, in-depth posts attacking my character on her personal Facebook account. I have people who screenshotted the shit out of all that. I also did. But with my Google Voice number, I was able to make sure that after the third time that she called me, I was able to block her number. And anytime I picked up a phone call and it was her or my ex-husband, I was able to block those numbers so that they couldn't continue to do that. At a certain point, they'd have to stop. They couldn't keep, like, finding phones. But the harassment sometimes does lead offline. Online sometimes turns offline. And in this case, she came to my work and keyed my car.
Oh.
Harassed, like, she came into my work, she, like, trashed me to my boss, and then she went out and keyed my car. And I was like, what is my life right now? Because up until that point, I had only experienced harassment, like, on the internet. I had never experienced, mm-hmm. like...
An actual physical threat. So that's again, we get a nice little teacher moment here. There's a division between physical safety and reputational harm. And physical safety is making sure you're still alive at the end of all of this, that you're safe, that you your personal information stays personal enough that you are not at physical risk, that they're not showing up at your workplace, they're not sending things to your home, anything like that. And there are some structural things you can do to try and do that. That include if you addresses are vulnerable. Physical addresses are very vulnerable in that once people have them, you can't really do anything about that unless you move. And then just the people who come after you are at risk. So my strategy on that one is PO boxes. I haven't actually had a physical address that is linked to my name in several years now, and I have found that particularly useful. Because first of all, I move a lot, so I don't need to keep updating my addresses, but it also limits my exposure to risk. It's even things like my voter registration is to a PO box. There are ways that you can restrict access to your information that are put out in different states have different rules about this. It are mostly classified on if you're a victim of domestic violence or a victim of stalking. But you can do some of it proactively and actually get your information protected. So that's something to look at into your state's laws about whether or not you can protect that information.
It's also, I think, important to look up at your state's laws about what constitutes stalking. Because what I ended up, and what constitutes harassment, like what you can actually do with that information. Because when I took everything to all of those posts on Facebook and Twitter, and the fact that she keyed my car and the police report and everything, and I took all of that to the magistrate's office in Virginia, they told me that they couldn't do anything. They couldn't do anything because she had only showed up at my work once. She left when my boss told her to leave. The fact that she keyed my car after she left was sort of like a non-issue, and she never made any direct threat of physical violence towards me in any of her posts. So had she just said once, I'm going to kill her, I would have been in a much better place rather than spending the last like month and a half of my residence in Virginia living in fear that she was going to find me or find my car or find where I was staying and show up there and like attack me there.
So that's the chunk that gets into when we wish we had our lawyer about the things that we could actually do, because they had prepared chunks on this, and thus I didn't. But so definitely you need to keep an archive of any threats against you. So my most notable time was I used to work for IO9 and Gizmodo, which are part of the Gawker Media Group, which is also part of Kokoto and Gamergate, was when I was first getting started. So I got to be swept up in that joy and wake up every morning to comment sections that were just full of the most gruesome, vile imagery that I refused to describe. I would actually take my contacts out or my glasses off in order to check comments, and anything that was pink or any like humanish colors, it was insta-delete. Just banhammer all of them. Just assume it's awful. But during that time period, so I worked for them, roughly speaking, 700 days, during which I received 800 rape and death threats. So it was a little over one a day. And they're all in this gigantic archive. And I did work with a lawyer to decide what would constitute a real and actionable threat in my jurisdiction. At what point would it be important for me to notify? And I had to notify on absolutely none of them. I just keep the archive around. And I don't actually feel threatened by any of them because, I mean, half the time they couldn't even get my name right. The things I was getting threatened for were aliens are real, the Earth is flat, Pluto is a planet, Canadian way of spelling things is deeply offensive, absolutely worth dying over. That I once called the Cygnus spacecraft cute, that earned me a little rash of death threats that I was found very peculiar. I never knew solar panels on a spaceship were so enraging.
They're ferocious.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine if I said anything about SpaceX? Like, wow, I would have had them, like, lining up outside my place if they could find it. So, yes, it's good to keep an archive of it, but it's also getting into the emotional side of things. It's important to also keep an archive of the good things, because when you're a target of harassment, it gets to you, even when you know it's ridiculous, even when you know it's unfounded, even when you know this is like an extinction burst and it will pass as people get distracted by the next shiny obnoxious thing on the internet. So I keep around every email of somebody saying that they love my work. I keep around every time I have a superior or a boss say, hey, that was a great piece, I had to edit three words and it went live. Every time in real life I have these great interactions that don't have an automatic digital archive of them, I'll write them up and document them so that when I'm having those days that are just like 800 people want me to die, maybe they have a point, I have an even bigger archive of warm, fuzzy things to remind me, no, they're the minority. They're the 1% of the people commenting and that everything else is okay. So how do you deal with the emotional aspects of it?
The first time I posted live on the internet, right, the like first time I did like a really big thing before my sex ed and dating career really got started, I posted an article on exojane.com.
Home of some very friendly comment section.
Oh, very. It was, you know, it wasn't actually as bad when I like posted. It was like a year before it started getting real sketch. But I posted an article on like, I'm in a happy polyamorous relationship, right? It was the first article I posted. It's also how I came out as polyamorous to my family on a site full of 2 million monthly viewers.
Hey, at least you got paid for it.
All right. It wasn't that much, but all right, I'll take it. But after that, I realized that I still wanted to write things and I still wanted to talk about things and that the work I was doing was important because I already knew that the work I was doing in sex education was important. I was working in a little shop at that point. And so I knew that I was going to have to like go public, which meant I knew that I had to lay down some rules. And my rule to keep myself safe is whenever I post something online, I will read exactly 5 negative comments. At the point when I'm reading the comments that I get to comment number 5 that says, God, you're a fat whore and you should go kill yourself. That's when I say, I think it's time to take a bubble bath. And I walk away from that. And sometimes I'll come back and check in later, but it's always in increments of 5 because that way I can see those good comments and I can see that I've read like 15 comments and now I'm only at the 5th comment where somebody is saying, oh, what was my favorite one? It was, you know, cancer is a virus that you get injected when you get your vaccinations. Ooh. And that's probably why you lost your lung. What? I followed up with a lovely, hopefully you die. And I was like,
it's like the trifecta of terrible there.
Right?
Where you're like, wow, you have no science and you're mean. You have no redeeming qualities right now. Good job.
Nothing about you that I like.
Did they at least spell well and have good grammar?
God, no. I can show you. Never. I can literally show you. Yeah, no, it was awful. But at the same time, when you get to those 5, like, set a limit for yourself. You know, we always say don't read the comments, but I think for a lot of people, especially people who write and especially people who live publicly and especially people who live publicly but are not, like, well-known enough to get 800 threats in 70 days, we want to read the comments. We want to know what people are saying about our work because that feedback is important. Feedback is important for us. And so I just think that it's important to like make sure that you're setting like a limit to make sure that you know when to walk away. Because otherwise you sit there and you're like, you want to call it hate reading? It's not hate reading. It's self, like you're internalizing hate at that point. Don't do that.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's important to pick your battles about what you're going to talk about. A lot of you in here understand that already, and that you think carefully about some of the things you do in public because you don't want to deal with the consequences of how people are going to respond, or you're not sure how they're going to respond. And I mean, there's some things in, as a science communicator, that are hot button topics. If I talk about climate change, guaranteed, it's going to have a very violent reaction. If I talk about vaccinations, there's going to be major reactions. If I talk about sexual harassment in science, there's going to be major reactions. So there's some articles I could predict in advance were going to cause me problems. And those ones, I would do things like sometimes I'd buy a bottle of wine first and charge it to my editor. There are times where I would say, all right, I'm ready to hit publish on this, but not until my hedgehog wakes up and I can start cuddling him. So it's important to pick your battles, it's important to take breaks, and it's important to ask for and get support. And that support can be emotional or it can be logistical. So we talk about, like, don't feed the trolls, and there's all sorts of research now on actually don't feed the trolls is the most effective tactic. If you ignore them, they do eventually go away. But that doesn't mean you need to suffer in isolation. It means you can talk about it, just not to them. Talk about it to other people. Find people who understand, get support from them. Even do things like, hey, could you deal with my comment sections? I'll do yours tomorrow. Trade off on them. Like, take a break from Twitter and have other people report the abuse. Like, ask for help. Get that help. Also, ask for mentors. That, I mean, I definitely know people who get a lot more threats and a lot more nastiness than me. And I ask them, how do you deal with it? What are your tactics? What are your strategies? How do you deal with this? How do you process it? And that's where I've learned some of the things I've learned along the way. It's, you don't need to make every mistake yourself. You're allowed to ask other people what mistakes they made, then not do them.
Yeah, I definitely second the mentor thing. I had a friend of mine's, like, tight with Brianna Wu, and he, like, put us all into a chat together. And he was like, you should talk about, like, what you're afraid of. And I'm like, really? You didn't even, like,
not
ask
even
me
in
first?
Sentence?
Not even, like, that's it? Just gonna throw me in there? And she was really great about, like, letting me know, like, some of the strategies that she keeps in place to keep herself safe and to keep herself emotionally recharged, I suppose, would be the word I'd use.
Yeah. And so there's an element of this as well, that as you gain some element of power, you try and use that power to make the world a slightly better place. So this can be as simple as, we are in the world of the internet mob. It is very easy to direct hate upon a target, and that target does not actually need to deserve it in any way. Sometimes they can be terrible people. Sometimes they can have just said something silly. Sometimes they're completely innocent and have no idea what just hit them. Like, all those things happen. If you're in a position of power where you actually can have some influence, it's important to treat that with respect. It's punch up, don't punch down. It's always easy to take out the little guy. It's harder to actually go after the targets that need the attention and need the change.
Did you want to take the question that was?
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't have a question. It's just a story, what you said about support. At the Calgary Expo, I'm just speaking as a general volunteer, I can't offer much other information. We had a group, a Gamergate group, put up a booth there. Like, they just. Yeah, it was back in 2015, you know what I mean?
That was a very exciting mic.
Okay. In 2015, the Honey Badger Brigade set up a Gamergate booth because they are a Gamergate support site. They did it completely. They just Allison TMN, who is one of the heads of the Honey Badger Brigade, set it up, applied as a webcomic because she has a webcomic. Fine. And then she set up Gamergate all over it.
That Bait was on Switch.
Yeah. And then that night, she and another Gamergate guy, Sage Gerald, went to a panel where my friend Stephanie Chan was at. Women into comics. Just women talking about getting how they got into comics, what they like about comics. And they tried their best to derail it. Fortunately, we had... Okay, to get to the end of it there, we basically told them to leave because they had violated the terms of agreement, which is that one of the things, you cannot sell merchandise that is about rape jokes. And they were selling, you know, that, oh God, that, what the heck is her name, that that dull, dead-eyed looking, soulless character that Gamergate has. The
I have no idea their name, and that actually makes me pretty happy. But like, that's a piece of information I don't need in my life.
It was horrible. But the character was based on a rape joke, and as such, because of that, and the bait and switch that they pulled, and the harassment that they pulled, they were asked to leave. So in terms of support, all the volunteers, we said, hey, let's help each other. Let's make sure that all of our profiles are strong, and at least on Facebook there, and we all helped each other out to make sure that we were stronger against that kind of thing. And it really did help a lot out a lot for us, because it was like a minor blip, but it doesn't take much to get the gators going.
Yeah. So there are a couple of, again, a couple of things in there that we can pull out. So one of them is that if you start doing things like public speaking events, or if you're attending events, knowing that there is a harassment policy, how it functions, who you report to, is all really, really important. And if you want to go somewhere that doesn't have a harassment policy, asking them to put one in place can be remarkably effective. It is becoming less and less tenable for organizations to not have some awareness of the impact of harassment in whatever form it takes.
Just on a happy note, their booth was removed, and the cosplay is not consent sign was stuck in their place.
Nice. Always good.
And the booth next door got some extra space, so happy ending.
We like happy endings.
I speak at a lot of different cons, and I've been spoiled because I do a lot of like sex cons, sex ed cons, like kinky cons, that sort of thing. And they have impeccable harassment proceedings, because if you're going to a con where half the people are naked, you have to. Like, you have to. But I've been really lucky to speak here, and then at Awesome Con in DC for a couple years. I've been really lucky at some of these, like, these cons that I was really nervous about going into it, where I've gone into to Awesome Con when I was having, like, the issue with my ex, and I, like, gave photos and names of my ex and his girlfriend, and I was like, they might show up at my panel, I don't know. And they were like, not a problem, and they gave the names to, like, my volunteer staffer, and they pulled another staffer in just to, like, make sure that that person was there to help me out, just to keep an eye on the door and make sure that they didn't come through. If they did show at all, they didn't. And any time that I've worked with any sort of with AwesomeCon, I haven't needed it here, but I've been very easily able to go up to one of the grown-ups and say, hey, I'm having a bit of a concern, what do? And they're usually pretty good about, like, if they can't help me, pointing me in the direction of somebody who can.
So this sort of giving people an awareness that there is a situation, it again, it applies to all over in life, where you can do it at work, you can do it at your offices, you can do it at university campuses, you can do it in restricted buildings, anything like that. And if you know that you are currently actively being attacked, being targeted, you can do things like notify your credit card companies, notify your bills, make sure you've got a locked accounts with a nice secure password on them, and tell them, hey, I might be the target of attack right now. Please be aware of any attempts at social engineering. Please be aware of any attempts of charging things in unusual locations and logins from IP addresses that are nowhere where you know where I am. I'm not traveling. These things are happening right now. And that can also put people on alert. It can take some explaining as to what is going on, because it's kind of a mixed blessing that the word doxing is not yet a common vocabulary. It's great because it means so many people have had no need to know what that means in their lives, which, good for them. I'm kind of envious. And it's a little bit bad because then you have to try and get through and explain everything. If you're in a situation where you think that you might end up getting swatted, again, calling the local police department and saying, hey, this is a thing that's happening. If you get my address, please make sure to knock with your fists, not with your boots. It is a problem more in the U.S. than in Canada, but it's still an important reminder. And then on the final thing,
I'm on a T-shirt though. Knock with your fists, not with your boots.
Yes, I personally feel like that should be a general philosophy in the entire United States, but you know, that's my Canadianism showing. and just on like a final chunk of the whole, make sure your accounts are secure. You can also turn on two-factor authorization on a whole lot of things right now, and that saves a whole lot of problems if you know right away when your phone starts bleeping saying, hey, are you trying to log in here? Are you trying to log in here? Are you trying to log in here? And you go, oh, I have a problem. And no, I'm not. Go ahead.
Well,
Make sure to use the microphone because they're recording, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, because of the about the doxing and the swatting, my bank actually alerted me on my phone because I was using my credit card for a lot of charges this weekend. And it says, hey, you've had a lot of charges on your credit card. And they've been declined. Say yes to have them not declined. Oh, yeah, sure. So that's something you should, if your bank offers it, sign up for that. And for the swatting, that's what's important about making sure your police do know about it. At least get a paper trail started. So if someone does give your address, try to stick the SWAT team on you. Yeah. They're like, yeah, this person's been harassed and they let us know about it. So we have this paper trail. It's like, so you won't get swatted if that happens.
Well, hopefully not. It still happens sometimes. So there's a really, really nice resource called Crash Override that will actually walk you through step by step. They now have an app that will actually take you through step by step on how to lock down and secure your accounts. And yes, it won't do it to the highest possible level, but it will do it as a better than you would normally do level if you're a non-expert on it, of at least thinking about the types of things to do. So that will help you out with getting your digital life secured. Yeah.
I was going to add, I don't know if a lot of people realize a lot of places offer on-demand passwords now. I know my Yahoo account, when I want to log in, they text a password to my phone. There's never the same.
Yeah, don't reuse your passwords. I hope we're past that stage of security. Don't reuse your passwords.
Also,
it's the easiest thing to do. Just don't reuse them.
I set my I set an alarm on my phone. Every 3 months, I go into all of my accounts. I have a list of the accounts that require like two-factor authorization and authentication, whatever. I don't, who fuck cares?
We got the point, and it's after 10.
Thank you.
Good enough.
And I have a list of those in like an event on my Google Calendar every 3 months to go back through and check them and make sure all of my information is updated correctly. Especially now, this is really important because I had to go through and do that recently because all of those like emergency addresses were sent to my ex-husband, and the phone numbers often sent to my ex-husband as like a secondary emergency phone number. So if he wanted to, he could have gotten into all my accounts. And so I'm really glad that I was able to get in there.
You didn't notice that beforehand. So a big chunk of this coming out right here, what like the big overall theme of this is, you cannot have privacy without security. It's privacy is effectively, it's any sharing of any information without your consent. And it doesn't really matter what that information is. It's any information about you shared without your consent is a violation of your privacy. And in order to protect it, you need some form of security. And all we're really talking about is the type of information changes the type of security. Sometimes it's you restrict that information at all, that you restrict the existence of that information, PO boxes instead of physical addresses for registration. Sometimes it's restricting who has access to particular types of personal information, so using temporary Google Talk phone numbers instead of your mobile number in order to test out whether or not somebody is trustworthy, or just for sheer convenience sake of having perpetually disposable phone numbers. And then some of them are the physical safety things, which is the notification of your workplace or the police or anyone like that when you are actively under a targeted threat. And sometimes it's emotional safety of reaching out for help. So it's all part of a theme. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say also for password managers, especially some of the good ones, are a godsend for securing sites, because then you can get those nice beefy 40 character passwords, can't crack them quite so easily, and changing it is just a couple of clicks.
Yep, password managers are like essential because you don't want to reuse passwords. You don't want to have a password system that means you're probably not going to remember all your passwords. So password managers are the way to go.
My password is long and intense and incredibly chaotic, and it changes for every site.
Actually, I had a question.
Like, I just change like one thing in it, like at random. It's
and
have
then
to write
of course
it down.
Then you can also be me and like lock yourself out of all your accounts on a regular basis. Like that, especially switching back and forth across the Canadian-U.S. border, where I have different sets of information, and technically my legal name is shortened in one country versus the other. It just, yeah, anytime I spend too long on one side of the border, I go back and I'm like, I don't know who I am anymore. Can someone tell me? I can't access my money. I don't know where my keys are. I'll just wander the streets until a friend finds me and brings me inside.
You sound drunk.
It's good
That's
times.
Really what it is. It you sound
really
drunk.
It's crossing
you don't
the
know what your name is.
Deadly.
But what I was going to say is, for me, I work in cybersecurity. I have been for more than a few years. And for me, actually, I knew about doxing as kind of a background peripheral thing, knew what it was and people did it, but never really paid a lot of attention to it, especially in the course of my job, primarily because a lot of the threats I've had to deal with through corporate is significantly different, especially 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But actually the thing that was the eye opener for me was actually Gamergate, where, you know, reading about it and understanding, hey, there's essentially, if you break it down, an employee of a company essentially being attacked at a personal level, for absolutely no fault of her own.
Yeah. It's totally something I find terrifying, is that for me, every time my career gets does better, I end up higher profile, which puts me at greater risk. Mm-hmm. And I've always got this nagging feeling of like, that bad dating choice I made back in the year, is that going to come back and haunt me? Like, are all those like small mistakes I made in high school, somebody just going to come on out and see how much they can damage my reputation just because they can? And it doesn't even need to be truthful. Like, that's the bit you can't protect against, what people say about you. And on a slightly a related note of that, it's you also can't control what your friends are sharing about you. Is operational security to my mom is not a thing, right? Like, talking to my mom about, hey, maybe you shouldn't tag me in this photo where you've got your house address in it, was a very awkward conversation, but it needed to happen.
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder if it's slightly easier in the US, where you have more of a military context and more people might know about the concept of operational security. You'd just be like, yeah, just treat me that way. But in Canada, it's definitely not an easy conversation with mom.
So one of the things that you touched on in there is the bringing shit up from like way back in the day. And this is something that I get with in a lot of the activist communities and a lot of the sex positive communities that I have, is that one person will make one mistake 10 years ago and it's now 10 years later and somebody's bringing it up and using it to discredit their entire career. And you see this is a common thing that happens. And if this is happening to you and it is a thing that you said and you have learned and you have grown from it, the best way to handle it is to apologize. And you have to apologize correctly. You cannot do an, I'm so sorry you were offended, but I've grown and changed. It is a, I'm so sorry for what I've said. I'm sorry that I hurt people. I have grown and changed, but I understand why what I had said was wrong.
It's, I'm sorry, but doesn't work.
Correct.
Or, I'm sorry that you feel that way. The classic non-apology.
Yeah. No. It is, I'm sorry for hurting someone, because you did. If they're bringing it up and they're saying that happened, then you did, and you should apologize. And at the end of the day, it just makes you look a hell of a lot better if you know how to apologize properly.
Oh, man. Making mistakes in public is no fun.
No, not even a little.
And it will happen with everybody. So this actually, I'm going to be doing a panel on this track, I think, tomorrow afternoon, on how science fiction impacts public policy. And whenever we get into these conversations about the internet never forgets, I get starting to think about Spider Robinson's Melancholy Elephants. And it starts off as a tale of perpetual copyright and how we'll have sad artists in the end when they can never come up with original idea ever again. But I think of it in the modern context of, we as societies at some point are going to have some sort of willful forgetting. Because if we perpetually remember every mistake everyone has ever made for all eternity, we aren't going to be able to function as a society. Nobody is that perfect. We just aren't. So that's a cultural shift that I'm waiting for, that I hope catches up with the sci-fi aspect of things soon.
It's the entire idea of the island. If you keep kicking people off the island because they've messed up, eventually there ain't going to be nobody on the island.
It's a good thing that there's continents.
Right? So I would like to touch on real fast on different ways to take care of yourself mentally through all of this, because especially even if you're just preparing for this, this is exhausting. All of these things that you have to do if you want to be a public person on the internet, if you want to, avoid harassment on the internet, you want to know what it vaguely sounds like?
You're never
going to
avoid harassment. You're never going to avoid it. It's how do you manage harassment?
You want to know what this sounds like, this entire panel? Well, you know, you should never walk home in the dark, and don't cover both of your ears, and don't wear short skirts, and don't drink too much, and always go out with a friend who's sober as well, and make sure you have cab money to go home, and all of that same thing.
I'm going to get the microphone there so it can be recorded.
Where you were saying that, and I remember you from the yesterday on the harassment.
The revenge porn.
The revenge one. Slightly different, but yeah. Same story. And none of that entitles you to anything or any kind of action against you, but where is the line between personal responsibility and opening yourself up to that type of thing? How do you define that? Because I think that's the mistake most people make, whether you're an Olympic swimmer doing bong hits at a party where people have cell phones. I mean, you gotta kinda know what's gonna happen with something like that.
It's this privacy is a concept of any information being shared without your consent. And that is a cultural issue at its heart. Is if we had a totally different culture and that it was completely scorned to share anybody else's private information, we'd be having very different conversations. But instead, we get down to this: in order to have privacy, you need security. In order to have security, well, that's a mixture of technology and actions. That's things that you have to do to use the technology, and sometimes the technology doesn't exist, and sometimes the policy doesn't exist, and sometimes the laws don't exist. And those are things we need to be asking for. Those are things we need to be aggravating for. Those are things that we need to try and convince our lawmakers are worth protecting, and in all likelihood, they're only going to decide they're worth protecting when they get burned themselves.
And so this,
a lot of this only became a sort of concept of, well, maybe we should say encrypt username databases after the Ashley Madison hacks, where we had a whole bunch of straight white older men were all exposed for their sins. Suddenly we cared a lot more than about any other target group that's been hit.
So one of the things that I want to touch on, less of the like, more on the like social aspect, yep, to that, is the concept of like personal responsibility versus like deserving. Because we always have this conversation of, well, you know, nobody deserves this thing, but like maybe if they were more careful. That's not it. In a perfect world, I should be able to not have a password on any of my accounts and nobody should bother me. Nobody should bother me. In a perfect world, I should be able to walk down the street bare-ass naked and nobody would touch me. Nobody would say anything inappropriate to me. This is not a perfect world. And nobody is at fault and nobody is at blame if they do not follow steps and something happens to them. It just means that instead we say, this sucks. I'm sorry that this happened to you. Here's what we can do to make it happen to you less in the future. And that's how you step past that idea of the personal responsibility. Because I don't have this idea of like personal responsibility as like a belief system of like you are responsible for making sure all your accounts are locked down. Like, yeah, you should do it, but if you don't, that's not like it's not the end of the world.
You're an especially interesting case. I mean, it's your career that puts you out. Rebecca, you sort of were in a career.
Oh yes.
That a byproduct is exposure to probably a lot of unwanted harassment. You're just a...
Oh, I would say that I get a lot of harassment just for doing my job. The number of times people decide to introduce me as the sexy scientist is really quite absurd.
He's referring to my work, my sex work. Yeah, my non-sex ed sex work, my like cam work and things.
Which is, like, there's several levels of confusion here, and we're going to keep chatting back and forth, we're going to need to pass the microphone back.
Her job is way more harassment, like, people are less likely to harass me. Right.
It's only if we're talking like Z grade. Like, way down on that list. So there's
another question.
Yeah, it's you've been trying to ask your question for like easily half the panel.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment first off what you were saying about being the perfect world versus reality. I deal with that all the time. I deal with a lot of high school kids specifically. I run a youth group, and so I was looking for like suggestions, advice, whatnot to pass along to kids as far as keeping themselves
Oh yeah, so yeah, this
out
is
of harassment because it's real common in the schools and whatnot.
Yeah, and it is definitely something where, I mean, depending on which surveys you ask, over 60% of people report harassment. Over 20% of women or people who identify as feminine genders are reporting being sexually harassed. That increases with age, decreasing age. So it increases inversely to age. The younger the girls are, the more likely they are to be harassed. And about 10% of women have had nudes or partial nudes of themselves passed on without their consent. And revenge porn is only illegal in some places at this point. When you start looking at who is doing the harassing, men tend to be harassed by an equal mix of men and women. And women are mostly getting harassed by men. So there's huge cultural aspects at play here. And then we add in the sociological things, which is about how women are perceived in relations to sex, where women are hugely pressured to send personal, private images of themselves as part of the courtship process, which men are not, and men actually just flat out send unsolicited dick pics is like, that's a thing. I have several hundred of those, too, that just get sent to me. I don't even count them in the threat file. I'm just like, it's my collage.
If you feel really, like, just really, I don't know, not masochistic, but...
snarky?
Yes. I send photos of, like, penile surgeries back.
Just like, and here's how you can fix that.
Usually, and there's one, I can send it to you if you want. It's my favorite to use because people, like, all these dudes that send me these dick pics are just like, ah, what is that? I'm like, yes, that is the, like, dorsal.
That is what will happen if you continue to bother me.
Right.
So there's a whole bunch of disproportional things that happen towards particularly teenage girls. And, I mean, this is the, it sounds like ridiculous advice, but things like encrypting the nudes that they're going to be passing on anyway, but that's not advice you can give as a teacher.
Nope.
Like, that is not on the list of things you get to say to them. Instead, you get to point them at Crash Override and say, here's how you can secure your accounts. Here's how you can step through basic techniques. And, hey, by the way, you're not alone. This is a thing. It will happen. And here's some statistics so you can make slightly better choices on your risk-reward ratios of, is that tiny momentary buzz of getting their approval by sending a photo worthwhile for the fact that there's a not insignificant chance it's going to keep getting passed.
I would also, you know, you could just say, like, hey, just encrypt your photos before you send them.
Yes.
All photos. Any photo.
That really only gets it so it goes from you to your recipient who can then decrypt it and do whatever they want with it. So it still doesn't actually solve that problem.
In terms of when I do any sort of, like...
technology only goes so far. There's also social aspects.
When I do any sort of education with teens, specifically teenage girls, because I do deal a lot with sex education with teenagers, mostly because I work in communities where I say, hey, I am really happy to teach sex ed to your kids if you don't want to do it. And then there's an entire community of parents like, oh, thank God.
That was my stepsister's job.
Which it's meant, fun. Yeah, it's a great job.
It was great having my stepsister come to the classroom and give all the demos. And I'm the only person whose name she knew.
But one of the things that, like, I talk about with that is that even if your parents are, if you think that your parents are not going to be receptive to what you have to say in an instance like this, that they need to identify an adult that they can trust. Somebody over the age of 18 who, like, knows how to get in contact with a lawyer and the cops and everything like that, who knows how to calm them down. I don't care what... it could be a pastor, it could be like their mom's best friend, it could be their cool aunt, I don't care. find an adult that they can trust to talk to have these conversations with, somebody who can say, I'm hearing everything you're saying and I'm so sorry that you're going through this and I really want to help you. I also think that we need to talk to your parents. And I'm happy to go with you, and I'm happy to talk to them with you, and I'm happy to let them know what's going on, and I want to make sure you're okay, but we also need to bring this to the attention of the people who can, you know, pay for the lawyer and, like,
and deal with the fact that now there's, like, transmitting of child porn.
Right,
like,
exactly. But that's hard.
A whole mess of ugly in this. it's a dangerous world for them in many ways.
You couldn't pay me enough to go back.
All right. I think we're actually approaching near the end of the time slot here. So it's 10 minutes. Awesome. More questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. This was actually kind of a sensitive issue because one of my worst stalkers has mental difficulties. I want to say he's actually kind of bright, but he has the mental maturity of emotional maturity of a 7-year-old, and he's every con we go to, that we're both at, he like follows me all over the place. And the only thing I could think of to do is say, hi, hotel and venue security, can you talk to this guy and tell him to leave me alone? Because if I try to tell him, he gets really defensive and...
And it escalates.
It escalates. Like, can you help me de-escalate this? And it got to a point where I actually had to have security escort me to a hotel room because he was trying to follow me to my hotel room. And I'm just wondering if there's other, if you guys have ideas that maybe I haven't thought of yet that can be helpful when you have that situation.
So this is the blurring of the online and the physical again.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a constant question of things about once your physical location is known, it's, as in all of security, once the physical location is compromised, everything is compromised.
Yeah,
it's amazing how often that axiom comes true. So this is something I often wonder about in terms of, so again, I have to advertise where I'm talking. It's part of my job to get people to show up, but that also means the people who I really don't want to be there know exactly where to find me. So really what you can, the only things you can really do are look to the security of the institution, to look to the people who are responsible for the organizations going on, and to notify them of the issue and request their help. Like, we do not live in a society where you should do vigilante justice for your own defense. It is strongly discouraged, despite the number of superhero costumes we have wandering around the halls right now. So it's definitely, it's the call a friend option, but call a friend is call security.
Yeah.
Or getting escorted around. It's
bring a bodyguard.
It's unfortunate. And again, society changes would be really, really nice. I'd love to see, I have so many cultural changes I'd love to see just seep through the system. If I could just, you know, find that magical switch to start tweaking how we view society. But until then, work within the systems we have.
One of the things that I do, because I've only had this issue like once or twice, is pretty much every con that I go to, I request a second badge. And the second badge is my emotional support person.
Yep.
They're the person who comes with me. They're the ones who grab me water because they see me up here talking and they're like, she's like licking her lips. I mean, she's thirsty. And they're the ones that like go and grab me the granola bar because I'm like standing, people are asking me questions and I'm in 4-inch heels. I'm like, oh my God, I really love all of you, but I'm so tired. And they're also the person who, when I'm feeling uncomfortable with somebody or when somebody's like getting a little too close or a little too questionable, because like I said, I do a lot of sex cons. And so there are a lot of times when I'm like, my cup spilleth over out of my dress or my corset or my lingerie that I'm speaking in or whatever. And so like I keep somebody with me just to make me feel secure and supported. Yeah. Somebody who I can be like, you need to go get security, or somebody who can very simply be like, thank you, we're leaving now, and like,
yep,
usher me
out. I have one of those too. It's the plus one badge.
Yeah.
I usually term mine security because then they get to go into places they aren't otherwise allowed to go. They can also be called a gopher. And if you get sufficiently a high enough level of celebrityness, they actually assign you people whose job it is, and they also like navigate crowds for you and everything like that. One day I will achieve that.
As it is, I occasionally, the mosh pit, yeah, stance, like
occasionally
to
I currently
crowds.
Get service elevators, and that's like my magic badge right there.
So Brian Hanson.
Exactly. Very rarely. So yeah, the extra human being to help you out. Some conventions actually do buddy systems like this, where you can find impromptu ones of people who escort you from place to place. University campuses also are really, really good at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also create those systems at work. If you've got somewhere where you need support, arrange with other people. Ask a friend, ask security, ask coworkers, partner up with somebody else who has their own concerns, and look out for each other. We are but small and squishy and fragile humans, but we can make things better by taking care of each other.
How else do you believe that large social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter can better improve their security? I won't name my friend's names, but both of them, you know, they talk about racism and that. And Facebook has just gotten so ridiculous. At this point, they have multiple accounts. Luckily, they have a support system. Like, I'm one of their friends, and they have numerous other friends that they turn to whenever they get a 30-day ban. But it's like, as soon as their account comes back on, boom, they get banned for just saying, hey, something as innocuous to say, hey, this was racist, this is bad.
So I could not care less about the like security with the like passwords and things like that about Facebook. Certainly not when women who have had mastectomies can't be shirtless on Facebook. Mm-hmm. However, there are like graphic images of beaten women with rape jokes next to them, and those are completely allowed. And when reported, they get issued back with a, oh, there was nothing wrong here. Same thing for Twitter. The reality is that they don't care. Yeah, they don't care, because there is so much pushback from so many women and from so many minority groups who are experiencing so much harassment on a daily basis that half the time they just don't do anything. They won't.
Yet, you know, any NBC Olympics clips that ended up online came down within seconds.
Weird.
So there is, if you have ideas of how to fix abuse at Twitter, currently Peter Seibel is recruiting people for his team to be paid to do this. I know nothing else about that. He has done a last-minute recruitment drive, which, of course, is the greatest way to get diversity in your team, is to say, hey, wait, I forgot about you. Can you join me now? but if you do have ideas and you do want to get paid for that, apparently they're hiring at Twitter.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, because the really, really cynical part of me believes that the only reason that Leslie Jones got the support that she did after that first round of hate from...
everyone?
Yeah, and especially by like Milo, is because she was just in that big blockbuster movie, and there was a lot of attention on her.
She had a position of power, which made her both a target and somebody to protect. Now, one thing I do find slightly positive in all of that is that we are now at a tipping point in our society where it is politically expedient for a presidential candidate to voice support for somebody who is a target of abuse and to condemn the people abusing her. Like, that right there is a new thing we have not seen before. Previously, it's just been ignored. So maybe we're at the start of getting to a point where we as a society are actually treating this as a serious problem and start doing some meaningful changes instead of allowing people to have the crap beaten out of them all the time.
Yeah,
some quick things that are, like, sort of related. I'm very much of the if you see something, say something camp. If you see that somebody is being harassed online, hit the report button for the people harassing them.
Yep.
Like, if you see someone's being harassed online,
support for them at the same time.
Message them and let them know. If you need anything, like, feel free to message me and let me know, like, if you need to talk about this. Similarly, if you are on any sort of, like, I don't know, drive that says, hey, we forgot about you, why don't you come join us and help us out? I'm going to say this, and I'm really sorry. No, I'm not. If you are, like, a white dude in a group of other white dudes talking about harassment and, like, things that affect non-white dudes, possibly, maybe consider saying, huh, where's the diversity in this room?
This is so I like data, right? I'm a scientist. I really like data. And one of the most beautiful data points that I have ever seen is that the more diverse your group is, the better they are at solving problems and the more money a company makes. Like, it is just, like, flat out that direct. If you want to solve a problem, gather up people who are as ridiculously different as you can possibly find, who have radically different life experiences than your own, and you will solve every problem in a way that will make you more money, and you'll do it faster and more efficiently. So, like, flat out, diversity is amazing in all of its possible variations and definitions and descriptions. It's really effective. Yay, science! Last question? Anyone want to do a last question?
Oh, yeah. All right. Somebody we've never heard from before.
Yeah, yeah. Can someone
quick
throw the mic on him? We haven't thrown it once.
Oh.
There we go. Yay! The padded cube of throwiness.
Hi. I was wondering if you guys could comment on this scenario that happened at my work. I work at a small startup. It's only three of us. And I'm kind of de facto the IT guy. So... a delivery guy has a pleasant conversation with my coworker, never comes back again. She then starts getting all sorts of unwanted emails from this dude, not just on her work email, but also on her personal Gmail account. No idea how he got that. Come to find out, he doesn't work for that delivery service anymore, so there's no recourse there. She bans him, you know, blocks all communication, but he continues to keep making new accounts, and it's sort of like an ongoing thing. It's not violent, so there's no law enforcement response, but it's certainly unwanted and uncomfortable. Yeah. And I feel like me being in this position at work, is there anything that I could do here? You know,
so you can ask her if she would like your help to start with. Like, that's the first thing is
yeah.
All right. So you got her opt in for please help. Do you have any way of being able to filter out the emails before he gets to them, like have white lists on there of here are people who are supposed to be emailing her. Everyone who's not on that list gets a human screen first before we send it on.
Not like really. We're a new startup, so we're reaching out to all kinds of new people all the time. And, you know, we have to be a lot more open to incoming.
So that's something that could be employed in her personal email. Like, first and foremost, like, her personal Gmail account, set up something like that, and then, I mean, yeah, the work one is sort of complicated. And
or can you change her work email address, or can you forward it, or can you have somebody else screen her emails before she sees them? I mean, like there's a couple of ways to go about that. There's technological solutions, and there's human solutions. And human solutions is the call-a-friend answer. Of somebody, like, this is, we totally did this at Gawker, is we'd swap off who was dealing with each other's comments sections, who's dealing with each other's emails, just somebody going through and being like, delete, 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 or archive, 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 just get those out of the email box, because we can tell what they are right away, and then leave them to deal with their normal email. The technological solutions are more complicated, and quite honestly, I'm not a programmer, and I can't go into the level of detail necessary of how do you try and solve that particular problem.
You all should bond.
Exactly. I'm sure somebody in this room has a solution to that. Oh, we've got somebody at the front who has a solution. Can we get the microphone thrown back up here to her? See, ask the room solution. Many brains, many backgrounds.
Well, I actually work in IT, and I also have a one-person business. And one tool that I use, it's a free tool, it's called spamcop.net, and it actually, if you're not technologically savvy, you can like just copy and paste your email, including your headers, into this little tool, and it will parse the headers for you and tell you all the abuse addresses for their individual ISPs, and sends the spam reports for you, and just report it as spam and go on with your day. And I have gotten so many accounts deleted for people trying to spam my business account because of that.
Fantastic. And I think, did you have also another addition?
That was actually the exact
same. All right. And we've got somebody in the back there who's also.
And I think after this, we're probably at time.
Yep.
So as a kind of a personal hobby project and maybe future startup, I've been doing some work on text classification, which is basically the solution that's used for most spam filtering. I've also taught it at various points to recognize hostility and harassment. So I was moderating a subreddit, and I had a bot running this software. And if a comment was too hostile, it just got deleted immediately before it could turn into a back and forth flame war. And I'm trying to think of applications for that in other contexts where you might want that software filtering your email as well as a spam filter filtering your email.
Yep. Possible futures. I mean, at the moment, I know that attempts at doing fully AI comment moderation end up going a little bit off the rails, that it still requires humans to identify abuse sometimes, particularly when people start getting like all thrown shade or getting snarky about it. It's a little more difficult for AIs to identify. But certainly, that is part of the future I hope to have one day. All right, I think we are at time. So, as a quick little recap of things to do, try and lock down your physical information. Let people know on alert when you have a situation brewing. Reach out for support. Up your security. Pick your battles and know you aren't alone in this, and help each other out.
And take care of yourself.
Yeah, give each other hugs. Even little digital fuzzy hugs.
Drink your wine. Pet your cat. Yeah,
consensual hugs. Don't hug people who don't want to be hugged.
Have a nap. I don't care. Take care of you. Self-care is super important with all this.
Yeah, bubble
Please
baths.
Don't forget that.
Infinite bubble baths. All right. Thank you guys very much. Have a fantastic evening. I think you can find me online at Mika McKinnon on Twitter. What's your online
I'm
chunk?
I'm the Frisky Fairy, all one word, on literally everything.
So there we go. Have a great night.